Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll talk with Stephen Stocking, who is featured in the TheatreWorks Silicon Valley's performances of Archduke by Rajiv Joseph, a satiric look at the circumstances that led to World War I. Conductor Tim Selig talks about the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus upcoming Gay Pride performances that commemorate the 50th anniversary of Stonewall in a show entitled Queens. You'll also hear about this weekend's performances at ODC of the Drescher Davil Invented Instrument Duo in an interview with Paul Drescher and Sarah Cahill. Plus highlights of the summer San Francisco opera season and the continuation of the Other Minds Festival, which this Saturday presents Oakland-based composer Brian Baumbusch's gothic musical horror tale, The Pressure. Stay with us. This past weekend was quite a couple of nights for our friends at TheatreWorks Silicon Valley. On Saturday, the company opened the Northern California premiere of Rajiv Joseph's Archduke. I'll talk with actor Stephen Stocking shortly about that. And on Sunday, a delegation from the theater was in New York City to receive the 2019 Regional Theater Tony Award at the American Theater Wing's 73rd Tony Awards at Radio City Music Hall. Congratulations are in order all around. TheatreWorks Silicon Valley does present the Northern California premiere of Archduke, written by Pulitzer Prize finalist Rajiv Joseph. Archduke explores how one man, one moment can derail an entire century. That one man being Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and that one moment, his assassination in 1914 in Sarajevo. In Archduke, three hapless insurgents embark on a darkly comic quest for immortality and purpose, unaware that their actions will launch World War I. Joseph's masterful satire examines present-day terrorism by delving into this moment that forever changed the world, illuminating how little may have changed from then until now. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome one of the actors, Stephen Stocking, who plays Gavrilo, one of those three hapless insurgents. Stephen's New York and regional credits include Rajiv Joseph's Obie Award-winning play Describe the Night at Atlantic Theater Company and Alley Theater, the world premiere of Archduke at the Mark Taper Forum, where he also played the role of Gavrilo, as well as productions at Portland Center Stage, Shakespeare Theater Company in D.C., and a number of productions around China. TV credits include The Good Fight on CBS and Z, The Beginning of Everything on Amazon. Stephen makes his TheatreWorks debut in this role. Stephen, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Well, former fellow New Yorker myself, I'm pleased to learn a little bit more about where you're living in Brooklyn. It was nice to hear that. So this work is darkly comic. This is a pretty heady subject. Now, you're familiar with Rajiv Joseph's works, not only in this role, but his other plays as well. Is there a particular way he allows humor to come through in the drama?
Yeah, well, I think Rajiv is kind of a master at finding the absurd and portraying it in a way that's both entertaining, moving, and also, I would say, deeply poetic and beautiful. I don't know how much you know about the true story of this assassination, but the actual historical events are so absurd. And the string of events that led to, you know, World War I and the unraveling of all these alliances in Europe and shaped the course of our century, of the last century, it almost should never have happened.
Mm-hmm. And well, Silford offers a history 101 on those events.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, what we tell the story in the play, so I don't want to give too many spoilers, but the real events of these three guys and their group that went to try to assassinate the Archduke on that day, it's astounding. I mean, you know, they were positioned at several points along this parade route, and one guy had a bomb, someone had a gun. The guy with the bomb threw his bomb at the Archduke's car, but he either missed or he mistimed it and it blew up a different car. Then the Archduke escaped and, you know, went on with his day, but eventually decided later in the day to just go and visit these guards who had been injured. And in the course of that, took an unplanned route, turned onto some street that he wasn't supposed to turn onto. Something went wrong with the car. And it just so happens that Cavourlo Princip is sitting in a cafe right on this corner. And basically the Archduke's car stalls or something right in front of him. And he walks up and shoots him point blank. And then, you know, we have the 20th century.
Wow. Wow. It is almost a Keystone Cops version of
history. It's crazy. Yeah. We had, when we did it in L.A., we had a couple historians who came and said they were so glad that Rajiv was writing in this absurdist style because the actual events are so astoundingly absurd. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, a great warning for the time we're in now where, you know, listening to the news every day, absurdity is kind of mounting.
Yeah, and history repeating itself in too many ways that we won't get into on this show, that's for sure. Now, you did mention the version at the Mark Taper Forum, who originally commissioned and produced the play in 2017, and you played Gavrilo in that production. Tell us a little bit about the differences between this production and that.
Yeah, sure. So it's actually remarkably different. We can't call it a world premiere this time because it already had its world premiere, but I would say if anyone had seen the play in L.A., this is like a new play. On a simple level, there's, you know, an entire character that's gone from the play, which means that two scenes from the play are cut, and now other parts of the play were allowed to grow into that space. So I think Rajiv has done something really remarkable with this rewrite in terms of making it deeper and really fleshing out the humanity of these characters while still maintaining the zany comedy and, you know, all of that. So it's exciting, and it feels like doing a brand new play again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how does some of the comedy come through, and is it just because of the bizarre? How can you even explain how these things happen? Way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what it comes from is sort of the childlike innocence of these characters. That it's really a story about, you know, three young men who are dying of tuberculosis, have nothing in the world, have never had any luxury or anything, and basically someone comes along and offers them meaning in their life, and offers them food, and offers them nice clothing, and offers them, you know, the possibility to be remembered. And the comedy comes from their, you know, simple desires, and their. It's almost like I feel like it's a bit like doing a clown show in a way, and I mean that in the sense of like the old European style of clowning, which is about heightened truth and not to say like red noses and a circus kind of clown, but yeah, something that comes from that tradition of a heightened theatricality where simple things cause a much bigger reaction than they would in normal life. Mm-hmm. And so that leads to a lot of fun situations.
Mm, nice. Are there any other casting holdovers other than yourself from the L.A. production?
I'm lucky to be the only one that is still with the show at this point. Yeah, who knows, for whatever reasons, but I'm happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's give a shout-out to the rest of your trio of hapless insurgents. Yeah. Also includes Adam Schonkweiler and Jeremy Kahn.
Yeah, those guys are fantastic. They're both local Bay Area actors, just tremendously fun to work with. We also have Louisa Sarmal, who's the playing sort of the Earth Mother, old European, almost witch lady in the show. She's the female force, and if we had listened to her, probably things would have gone a lot better in history. And as well, there's Scott Coopwood, who plays Captain Dragutin Apis, who's sort of this anarchist who in history recruited these boys and, you know, organized a number of assassinations leading up to this one and after it as well.
Mm-hmm. So what has director Giovanni Sardelli, who is TheaterWorks director of New Works, brought to this production that makes it a bit different from the premiere?
I think in a way similar to the writing, that things have deepened. So while it still has the kind of style of comedy that the Taper production had, It's sort of adjusted a little bit to find a little bit more grounding and a little bit more a slower development with each of the characters. So we get to spend more time with people, and there are a lot of more gentle moments, which I think is really nice. We get to meet them as deeper humans before they kind of go off the rails.
Mm-hmm. And you were in his production of Describe the Night.
Yeah, I worked with Giovanna and Rajiv on that production as well. I actually met them when I was in grad school at NYU. I was very lucky that they came in and were sort of assigned to my class. Rajiv basically wrote that play around my classmates in school. And then I was lucky to be kept on as it went into production in Houston first, and then at the Atlantic in New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll also be working with Giovanna at the Dorset Theater and Dorset Playhouse in Vermont next month for the world premiere of Mrs. Christie by Heidi Armbruster. Tell us about that play.
Yeah, that one's going to be a lot of fun. Dorset Theater is this amazing place in Vermont where they get a lot of great people from New York to come up for the summer, largely because it's a very beautiful place to be in the summer. The play is about Agatha Christie and her infamous disappearance, where she disappeared for 10 days. There were thousands of people searching the English countryside for her. Meanwhile, she's holed up at a day spa, kind of just relaxing and refinding herself after discovering her husband having an affair with a younger woman. So it's that, and it has like a modern day parallel story about a woman trying to go over to England to sort of eat, pray, love Agatha Christie. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's a great play.
August in Vermont. I love it. Well, I know New Hampshire in the summertime as well, being a Connecticut native. I miss those summers over there, that's for sure. And Mrs. Christie runs at the Dorset Playhouse from August 1st through the 17th. You can learn more about that and Stephen's other activities at his website, stephenstocking.com. That's Stephen with a PH, Dorset Theater Festival world premiere of Mrs. Christie. The TheaterWorks Silicon Valley production of Rajiv Joseph's Archduke runs through the 30th of this month at the Mountain View Center on Castro Street in Mountain View. First rate, humor with a global conscience, so says the Los Angeles Times. Here's another great review. It is Stocking's hilariously bumbling, deliciously naive, achingly vulnerable Gavrilo who gives Archduke its heart and soul, so said Stage Scene L.A. And if you're familiar with our own San Francisco Chronicle Datebook Pink Pages, the little man is jumping out of his chair.
Great.
Stephen, thanks so much for taking some time today. Again, more information at theaterworks.org. Some music from Archduke, presented by the 2019 Tony Award-winning Regional Theater Company, TheaterWorks Silicon Valley. Archduke runs through the 30th. Information at theaterworks.org. Theater with an R-E. Theaterworks.org. Good afternoon. Once again, I'm David LaTulip. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. The Drescher Davel Invented Instrument Duo, which was formed back in 2001, and after many concerts in the national and international front, will present their first full-length concerts here in San Francisco this weekend at ODC. The concert includes a world premiere of a new work by Paul Drescher, as well as existing duo repertoire. The instruments were created by Paul Drescher, Daniel Schmidt, and the pioneering electronic music inventor Don Buchla. After the concert, the audience will be invited on stage to play the instruments and interact with the performers. Let's hear an excerpt of Paul's work, Glimpsed from Afar, performed on the 15-foot quadrichord, with Joel Davel's playing the marimba Lumina. Then you'll hear Sarah Cahill's recent conversation with the composer.
Glimpsed from Afar by Paul Drescher, with Paul Drescher and Joel Duvall on that recording. It's a piece that you can hear at the ODC Theater. Thanks for coming to the studio, Paul.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Sarah.
It's great to see you. So much to ask you about that piece we just heard and about this project. So, first of all, that's just the two of you.
Yeah.
It sounds like a whole large ensemble, but it's just the two of you.
It's two invented musical instruments, one an electroacoustic instrument, the other a more electronic instrument. I'm playing the quadrichord, which is a four-stringed instrument. The strings are about 14 feet long. Instrument's about 15 feet long total. It's four strings. That's why it's called a quadrichord. And I invented it in collaboration with Daniel Schmidt, my longtime inventing collaborator. We've been doing things together since the 1970s.
Mm.
It's an amplified instrument, and a lot of why we heard so much sound is that we do live looping. So I record usually what the quadrichord is doing, although there's actually one track there that I record Joel, and it put him into the looper as well. And then Joel is playing Don Buchla's Marimba Lumina. So Don Buchla was one of the great electronic instrument inventors and pioneers of electronic music. Just died about 3 years ago. And Don had an enormous impact on throughout the electronic music world. And Joel was one of his, actually one of his staff people, and worked with Don for over 25 years. And in fact, Joel still continues to work for Buchla and Associates. And and one of the instruments that Don built was a thing called Marimba Lumina, which is a kind of marimba control, electronic device that's laid out like a marimba, played with marimba technique, but it's not necessarily, you can play any sounds that you ask it to play that you have in your computer or sounding devices.
So that's a very flexible instrument. And your quadrichord that you invented and built, has an incredible range, because there were parts in the piece we just heard, Glimpse from Afar, you're doing melodic work, and there's the whole percussive part at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so you keep sort of shifting what exactly you're doing on the instrument.
Well,
you also have, I have to say, a big groove in your
thumb.
In your thumb from doing the sliding.
From
right?
sliding yeah. on that instrument, yeah.
Oh.
Part of, when you're, the reason I'm doing contemporary music, and I've done it all my life, is that I'm curious about sound and different how sound is made, and how you can make sounds from different objects. So that led me into inventing. Actually, I invented my first instruments when I was in high school, and I've been inventing mostly acoustic or electroacoustic instruments, but there was a period when a lot of my inventing was more in the electronic realm. I had a very elaborate tape loop system that was an analog tape recorder with foot pedals. Actually, I called it an instrument. It didn't produce any sound, but allowed me to record myself live. Now we do all that digitally, and it's quite simple, and lots of people can do it. But when I was building the analog system, it was not possible to do that, and so it was a very elaborate electronic construction process.
Mm. Like those days where you hear about Terry Riley and Pauline Oliveros and long loops of tape that go into
exactly,
the next room
yeah.
and come back.
Well, that was the inspiration for my for building a tape loop system was hearing Terry Riley in the 1960s and hearing and then studying that sort of tape music technique of building long, running tape over around mic stands and things like that. So you have very long delays and this was, of course, in the totally analog realm, before there was kind of the ease that which now we can do all those sorts of things with digital technology.
Yeah. So your invented instrument duo is going to be at the ODC Theater on 17th Street in San Francisco, Saturday, June 15th, and Sunday, June 16th. And for information, people can look at odc.dance/unseen. This is Unseen Unheard.
That's the name we typically give a title. To Unseen. This one is called, this program is called Unseen/Unheard.
And this is the first full program that these two instruments have had in San Francisco.
There's actually four instruments. On the program.
Oh, yes.
The piece.
The Hurdy-Grande. Yeah.
This work for the quadrichord and Marimba Lumina. There's going to be there's a work for called Moving Parts for Hurdy-Grande, which is a second large-scale invented instrument. This instrument has seven strings, and it's about 10 feet long. But the really big difference is that the strings are bowed by a mechanical rotating wheel. And so it was inspired by the medieval European folk instrument, the hurdy-gurdy, but ours is much bigger, so I called it the hurdy-grande. And the technique of playing is really different than what a hurdy-gurdy's technique is, but nonetheless, it uses that was the idea, inspiration behind it. And it's a much more complex instrument than the quadricord. The quadricord you could almost think of as a giant electric bass, except that we don't play it like a bass. You could play it like a bass, and we do at times, but it also, I bow it like a cello, and we drum on it like a percussion instrument, and we also do preparations. For those of you who know prepared piano, an amazing repertoire by John Cage, and then by many other younger or subsequent generations of composers have also used the prepared piano, where you put objects between the strings, and it completely transforms the instrument from what we know as a classical piano to a gamelan, a wild percussion instrument. And so that same kind of preparations happen sometimes on the quadricord. So the hurdy-grande is really a bowed instrument. We do use it percussively, and you will all hear us use it like a harp at times, but most of the time it's being a bowed instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have on the program, Joel is doing a composition of his called Out of Thin Air. And it uses a wonderful invention by Don Buchla called lightning. And basically Joel is using two wands, in each one in each hand, and an infrared sensor translates the motion that Joel does with the hands in very specific areas of space into triggering information to trigger electronic music. And so it's a very visual and kind of theatrical and times humorous, because he's got a range of sounds that make a lot of cultural references as well.
Great.
And then there's a world premiere on the program, which is this new work, which is for the first time I'm combining the quadricord and the marimba lumina and the hurdy-grande all in the same work. So that's the latest piece that I'm still finishing up.
How can you play both of them at the same time?
I can't, but by looping, I can record a track or two, whatever, on one of the instruments, and then go add another track from a different instrument.
And looping, we should just say, for people who aren't familiar with the term.
Yes. Looping is basically taking a duration of recorded sound and then having it repeat as long as you wish to.
You record it when you're actually playing.
Record it live. I press a button on the floor with a foot pedal. I press
while
a button, say, start
something.
Record.
Yes.
Yeah, my feet are very active in these performances, because they're doing the mixing and the recording. And my hands are playing the notes, but my feet are controlling what you hear. And the music that I loop is usually composed to be precisely a certain length. And so I record, I'm playing that part. If I happen to make a mistake, I just erase that loop and start again until I get it right. And then I can lay down second loops, third loop, fourth loop, fifth loop. I can have them be in exact synchronization with the first loop, or I can have them be independent if I wish.
So you're basically playing with yourself.
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Performing
so
with
you,
yourself.
So, probably the most layers we have going recorded-wise is five or six at one time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's whatever we're doing live on top of that. And that is something that is really the characteristic performance of how the Invented Instrument Duo gets all those layers and all that rich level amount of sound is, or we perform loops that have been composed so that all the layers fit together. And so you heard in the piece we first heard in Glimpse from Afar, we heard, I think, two complete loop structures. Now, sometimes I try to make them so that they don't just sound like they're just repeating, and so that it gets boring. I'm constantly changing things, and I've designed the loops to work together and synchronize in ways that the pure repetitive nature of the technology isn't so much the primary thing that you're experiencing, that you're constantly experiencing some forward motion, some development in the music is always changing. But that's my personal compositional approach.
Thank you to Sarah Cahill for that recent conversation with composer Paul Drescher. Once again, the performances at ODC are this Saturday at 8, Sunday at 3, performing live on a unique set of huge invented musical instruments. The electroacoustic duo of acclaimed composer, performer, all-around nice guy, instrument inventor Paul Drescher, and the percussionist extraordinaire Joel Develle will fill you with wonder. The audience will be invited to try their hand on the instruments after the performances as well. Ticket information at odc.dance. No reason to stay home on a Saturday night this week, that's for sure, especially if you're a fan of creative contemporary music, as you just heard, the Drescher Develle invented instrument duo. Also of interest this weekend is the Other Minds Festival 24, which you've been hearing about quite a bit on these very airwaves. On Saturday at the Yerba Buena Center, you'll hear the world premiere of The Pressure by Oakland-based composer Brian Baumbusch. It's a tale of gothic horror told in music with a story straight from the Twilight Zone. A snake oil peddler comes to town, a town suffering from painful barometric pressure, and promises a cure. There are unforeseen consequences. Be careful what you wish for. This Other Minds commission is for narrator, a role which will be taken on by the composer, and a varied and eclectic mixed ensemble of instruments and voices. It features more than 24 performers, including the Lightbulb Ensemble and Friction String Quartet, three keyboardists, and a vocal quartet. This nightmare world is explored through an original story written by award-winning playwright Paul Baumbusch and evocative visuals by Federico Yankelevich of Madrid. Visit otherminds.org for more details. The 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Inn riots is being commemorated near and far this year during the month of June. Over on the Right Coast, where it all began and where the bar is located, many celebrations are being planned, including the New York City Gay Men's Chorus commemoration of the anniversary, as well as the 40th anniversary of the founding of the chorus, with brand new choral music suite co-commissioned with the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, which will have its performances throughout the U.S. this year in New York City on the 27th of this month. Quiet No More features the voices of a group of diverse LGBTQ composers, including Julian Hornick, Our Lady J, Mike Shaib, singer-songwriter Anne Hampton Calloway, among others. Closer to home, many folks don't remember that the San Francisco Compton Cafeteria riot predated Stonewall by 3 years. Nonetheless, our own San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, under the direction of Dr. Tim Selig, will present Queens, featuring beloved gay anthems as well as songs that pay tribute to the themes of strength, perseverance, and acceptance. Tim Selig, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you so much. That was quite a lead-in.
Happy to have you. Boy, this program must have been in the works for some time, knowing that the 50th anniversary of Stonewall would be a big deal. Tell us about how the program came together.
It has been planned for quite some time, maybe 2 years. It's a huge event in the LGBTQ journey. I'm scolded often about not making too big a deal out of it, although I like to make a really big deal out of it. In the overarching arc of our history, it is an event, but it is a seminal event around which so many people rallied at that point. As you mentioned, we're starting with the Compton Cafeteria riots because it was the same thing, except here it was thwarted by Reverend Cecil Williams and the ministerial staff and members of Glide Memorial Church, because the police were harassing the transvestites and drag queens at the Compton Cafeteria.
And this was a safe space for them.
And it was supposedly a safe space after they got off work, usually at 2 a.m. And the police, the cafeteria people would call and say, you need to come take care of these people. And the police would come and harass them. And the Glide Memorial people and ministerial staff went and stood and protected them as they came and went. And it caused riots for several nights, but then it dissipated and did not become the worldwide phenomenon that Stonewall did. As we looked at both of these events, we were trying to come up with a creative and interesting way to highlight who really made this happen and who do we really have to thank for these events. And it turns out that it was drag queens and transvestites and lesbians and trans women in both New York and in San Francisco. So we decided, because we are rich in this community with incredible women who have taken care of us and helped us throughout the years, that we decided that we would take a different turn and not just talk about Stonewall. That was one night that, of course, changed the course of our history. But we decided to commemorate Stonewall and Compton Cafeteria by highlighting the people that really did the fighting that night. And we are doing that by highlighting celebrating the Imperial Court, the Ducal Council, and the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. So those three groups have truly made such a huge difference. The Sisters were not a part of the Cafeteria and Stonewall, let me be clear, but formed shortly thereafter, really to help us through the AIDS crisis. So these three groups, and all three have gone worldwide. They have chapters all over the world, but of course we're started here in San Francisco.
Well, what's your personal historical recollection of both the Compton Cafeteria riot and Stonewall? Where were you? How old were you?
Oh, dear.
Let me be careful about that.
People getting out their calculators. Well, the Compton Cafeteria riots, I remember well because I was 15, and that is a joke because I was in the bowels of Texas at that point. And Compton Cafeteria, I was a senior in high school in Texas, a good Baptist boy. I had no clue that it happened. My own historical reference to both, especially Compton Cafeteria, came when I was here in San Francisco 3 weeks, and John Stewart called and said, we need someone to be a spokesperson for San Francisco because they had just named us 11th most gay city and Minneapolis the most gay city, and they did a whole segment, and I was here for 3 weeks. I'm like, I'm the wrong person to do this. And so they literally dragged me to the GLBT Museum and did a day-long crash course in San Francisco, basically history, so that I wouldn't be completely stupid. And then they asked no questions. But I got my primer out of the way, and it was great. And if you haven't been, you must go to the GLPT Museum. It's amazing.
So after leaving Texas, you became a little bit more informed about these very historical events, and now we're tying them both together into this program. Tell us a little bit about the music then that we'll hear.
Well, the music will start with the hit, the big hit of 1965, which predates Compton by 1 year, but it was still a hit, was Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence. And it's going to be very dramatic. We have narration describing what happened that night, giving homage to Cecil Williams, who's been such a stalwart in this community to assist every aspect of the community that is other. And we're singing Sound of Silence. And the verses, the texts are chilling. Written in 1965. Mm. And so it starts with Compton Cafeteria, but then, of course, it just takes off into our very best revelry and celebration. And we have drag queens, guests.
Well, let's back up to the Sounds of Silence. Whose arrangement is that?
It is actually a man from New York named David Maddox.
Mm-hmm.
It's
nice.
Beautiful. Mm. Yeah, it's really good. Chilling. And the hall is dark and then an empty stage when Compton Cafeteria starts. And then the guys all take off and then it starts.
And of course, as you were about to mention, Razzle Dazzle and a heap and helping of creative choreography are always a feature and a highlight of a Gay Men's Chorus production. Preview the spectacle for us.
Oh my goodness. Well, we are doing, we have a huge drag show number from Elton John's Aida. It's a big favorite. It's called Strongest Suit. And we are presenting San Francisco and actually chorus drag queens because it's all about dressing nice. So that's one of the big production numbers. But the first half ends with us singing the standard I Am What I Am while we present emperors and empresses and dukes and duchesses from the last 50 years of both of those organizations, and we have representatives. The stage will be completely filled with royalty, not just we as queens, but you know the other ones. So it's a huge number, and we're really excited about the number of rhinestones that will be on stage at that point. We open with Mighty Reel by Sylvester. So how could we be in San Francisco and not do Sylvester? So we're doing him upright in the opening of the second act. And then we close with a RuPaul medley, and it's another big show. So a big show stopper, we hope. I mean, we hope it stops the show because it's the end. So that would be really convenient.
It would.
It would. But we're doing, in between, we're doing some beautiful world premiere pieces that were written for this occasion for us. And, yeah, I think the audience is going to love it. And then we have our guest drag queens. We have the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence singing Hail Holy Queen, you know, from Sister Act. So
you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll need to bring a tissue.
You will need to bring a tissue as we honor those who are no longer with us with a world premiere called The Great Flowing River.
Oh, wow.
It's beautiful. Nice. We're also doing a piece, a Lady Gaga piece called Angel Down that she wrote for Trayvon Martin. We are using it as a tribute to all of the trans women who have been murdered recently.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Touching and as well as exciting and fun, all together in one package. The San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus Queens concerts will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 21st and 22nd of June at the now-named Sidney Goldstein Theater, formerly known as The Norse. Information at sfgmc.org. And how exciting. We need to mention this, Tim. The Gay Men's Chorus is featured as the final film in this year's Frameline.
It's huge. It is. We were so thrilled to be selected at all and then to be selected as the final event. The documentary Gay Chorus Deep South follows us on our tour to Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And it's spectacular. And I'm happy to say and humbled to say that as of today, we are in 45 film festivals and are winning audience favorites. Well, we've won audience favorites in Switzerland, Canada, and the U.S. so far.
Fantastic. More about that screening of the documentary at frameline.org. And I'll be talking with someone from Frameline next week about that. So sfgmc.org for more information there, frameline.org about the documentary coming up. And part of the concerts that are coming up on the 21st and 22nd will be an excerpt from Andrew Lippa's oratorio, I Am Harvey Milk, which was originally recorded by the chorus and commissioned by the chorus. Why don't we go out with Friday Night in the Castro for
Great.
That oratorio.
Perfect.
Tim Selig, always a pleasure. Please come back and see
Thank
us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Tuesday night, and I might go insane.
Wednesday hits, and still I know it's so, so very far away.
Thursday finds me on my knees. And I pray
one more day until I get to bed.
Friday night in the casserole, Friday night in the weekend saves me. I'm all right if I get to dance till the break of dawn with the music on. Friday night in the casserole, dynamite on the floor.
Friday Night in the Castro, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Their concert, Queens, coming up on the 21st and 22nd. Information at sfgmc.org. A bit of the intermezzo from Georges Bizet's opera Carmen under my voice, which is among the San Francisco Opera's summer season offerings. Mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges is making her professional role debut in the title role, and tenor Matthew Polanzani as Don José, presented in longtime San Francisco Opera director Francesca Zambello's acclaimed staging, which has also been seen and mounted by Opera Australia, Royal Opera, Covent Garden, and Norwegian National Opera as well. James Gaffigan leading the opera orchestra, chorus, and soloists. Five performances remaining through Saturday the 29th. Also underway with four performances remaining is a unique production of George Frederick Handel's 1733 opera Orlando, with the great Sasha Cook in the title role, Heidi Stober as Angelica, and the gifted countertenor Arya Nussbaum-Cohen as Medoro. In the original story, Orlando is a great soldier in Charlemagne's army who falls desperately in love with the pagan princess Angelica, who is in turn in love with another man, Medoro. Orlando cannot accept this, and he is driven to madness, prevented from causing absolute carnage only by the magician Zoroastro, who eventually restores his sanity. This unique production presented at San Francisco Opera is designed by Yanis Thavoris and directed by Harry Fair, and it's a production of Scottish opera. It updates the setting to World War II, where the main character, Orlando, now a pilot, is reimagined as being trapped inside his war-torn mind in a military hospital and can't tell reality from delusion. The trauma of war has turned his love into madness, and only through the help of his friends can he overcome the lasting effects of war. You'll recall that the San Francisco Ballet offered a version of the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale The Little Mermaid last month, with music by Russian composer Lera Auerbach. Well, also inspired by the fairy tale, as well as the novella Undine by Friedrich de la Motte Fouquet, Antonin Dvorak's Rusalka follows the tragic heroine of the title, a water nymph, who makes a grave sacrifice to win the love of a human prince. The third offering of the opera's summer season. The Czech fairy tale opera features a cast headed by Rachel Willis Sorensen in her role debut as Rusalka, and Brandon Javanovic as the prince. South Korean conductor and Houston Grand Opera principal guest conductor Yoon Sun Kim leads the cast, and San Francisco Opera Orchestra in her first company engagement. The standout aria from Dvorak's Rusalka is the Song to the Moon, one of the loveliest operatic melodies ever, in which the titular water nymph debates a life in the water or on land. In a piano accompaniment, here is Rachel Willis Sorensen, who, again, will be singing the title role in these San Francisco opera productions, which opens this Sunday with a matinee, then continues for four additional performances through June 28th. More information on all of the opera's offering, visit sfopera.com.
Thank you.
Antonin Dvorak, sung by Rachel Willis Sorensen in the title role of Rusalka, opening Sunday at San Francisco Opera. sfopera.com for more information. That's open air for this week. A reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. Thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing. My email is david@kalw.org. If you've got a suggestion for a future guest or feedback on any of our open-air broadcasts. Once again, I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks so much for listening.
KLW is a media sponsor for the Other Minds Festival, happening this Saturday and Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. Be one of the first five callers right now to win tickets. Call 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.